Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Toronto fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. Real quick before we jump into things today, some show notes. If you are looking for some professional wrestling, you have blue collar wrestling today, like usual, at the North Portland Eagles. It is, of course, pay-per-view tonight. Then you also have going on tonight SPW in Sacramento, California, GPW in Swansea, Illinois, and CCPW in San Luis Obispo, California. So get out there, support some independent professional wrestling today if you have some in your area. And also happy Father's Day. It is, of course, Father's Day today. But today we are talking refereeing, professional wrestling refereeing, something not everybody fully appreciates or understands, but it is a very, very vital part of the wrestling industry. And we have a couple of refs from across the country with us today, besides myself, who has refereed a match or two in my day. We have from Baltimore, Ref Wayne. It's your first time with us. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, sir.
And returning to the program, from Blue Collar Wrestling in our neck of the woods, T-Rex, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Sanga.
Always a pleasure. Well, I will start things off here with a question that often gets asked by referees here on this program. What is it about being a referee that attracted you to the position? And we'll start East Coast first, Ref Wing.
All right, well, actually, it's one of those things where I'm kind of pulling a Diamond Dallas Page. I got started in the business really late. I'm 35 years old. And to be honest with you, the Maryland independent wrestling scene is pretty hot. Some big promotions bringing in big names. Of course, we got James Ellsworth running his promotion here. So as growing up, just being a wrestling fan, you know, I it was always a very thankless job. And, like, anytime you would see, like, the ref, like, get hit or, you know, the fans, like, boo him because he didn't see something, I was like, you know, like, I want to kind of do that. I know I'm not going to be taking any 450 splashes and doing any, you know, thing like that. But I just like the idea of bringing that level of authority and professionalism to the business. And it just kind of drew me right away. So when the opportunity to join a school arose here lately, you know, quite recently, actually, just about 8 months ago, you know, I did it. And really, it's been a very rewarding experience. And it's everything I hoped it would be and then some. So.
And T-Rex, what about you? What gravitated you towards wearing the stripes?
Well, Unlike a lot of people, I actually started out wrestling, and then I just didn't really kind of like it as much. I mean, I had, you know, a little bit here and there, but really what honestly started having me ref in the stripes is the Portland wrestling heritage of, like, people like Sandy Barr and that. I went to Sandy Barr to ask him to guide me as a ref and start training me as a ref in 2000, and from there it just seemed like that was the right thing to do because, for me, I always had a passion for the wrestling business. I just never really could get out the gate without stumbling over my own feet as a wrestler or getting hurt too much. So I think refereeing for me has always been just kind of a natural calling since I started. Like I said, I'm at Blue Collar Wrestling, as you know, I'm the senior official there. And over the years, I've been a lot of places where I've gotten that leadership role, if you will. And it just always seemed natural for me to be in there and be that third man, quote-unquote, in the ring to guide guys, you know, because there's a big, big world in the professional wrestling business. And, you know, being a referee is just part of it. I mean, we're the inner workings, I believe, more than anything. By the way, like I said, it's nice to see some younger guys. I mean, like Ref Wayne here that's out of Baltimore. Is it Baltimore, Maryland he's out of, you said?
Yeah. Yes, Baltimore, Maryland. Yes, sir.
Baltimore, Maryland. Well, that's funny you said that because I know a guy named John Rambo who's from that area. I've heard of him, and he used to be out here in Portland back in the day. So anyway,
oh, wow.
Just thought I'd bring that up while I was on the phone. But no, for me, I think refereeing is you got a to have a passion for the wrestling business in general. But to be a referee, you do take a lot of flack. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't always go per se right in a wrestling business, and it's usually the referee that's the first one to get blamed. So,
now referees in independent professional wrestling kind of run a really big gamut depending on the show. Some of them are trainees that are just getting started in the business and the promoters want to break them in that way. Some of them, that's their career path they want to be on, and they take it very seriously, and they're very, very good at their craft. Some of them are guys that know a guy that know a guy that know the promoter and get used in that role. I've seen all sorts of things. Now, Ref Wayne, when you're on a show and you're working with other referees, what are some of the things that you look for as far as seeing what the strengths and weaknesses are of the other referees and how you can maybe help them become better at what they're doing?
Yeah, well, I definitely think the referee role is very collaborative, especially on shows like that. I was fortunate enough to do a show here recently with Chris Levin, kid ref from TNA, and I learned a ton from him, just, you know, from the television side of it. But no, absolutely. I mean, whether it's, you know, you're the veteran or you're the quote unquote, you know, upstart guy, I mean, there's a form and there's a procedure to it. And, you know, you no matter how long you've been doing it, long or short, there's technically a million right ways. You know, there's like 100 right ways to do it, but a million wrong ways. So luckily, every show I've ever been on, I've ever worked, it's been very collaborative. We all kind of, you know, peep through the curtain, watch each other. And we could really care less about the match. We're really just watching the refereeing. And so after your match and you come back, you know, one of the guys will kind of sit you down and this is your high spot, this is your low spot, work on this, you know, be more vocal, you know, stuff like that. So I've been very fortunate to receive a lot of good feedback. And also give it, you know, because what I like is I figured, you know, as young as I am in the business, they'd be like, well, nobody wants to hear what you have to say. But they come by and ask me, how'd that look? What can I do better? What can I improve on? And I'm really honored to be able to give that feedback that I've garnered that much respect in really a short time. And it just makes me feel really good that the, you know, the industry and the referee role in general is such an evolution.
T-Rex, what about you? What are you looking for when we get younger referees in there as far as seeing what they can do and maybe evaluating them and helping them get better?
Well, I just try to pick something that they always do good and something that they might do bad. You know, I try to at least give them a little bit of criticism either way, try to help guide them and groom them because, you know, a lot of these younger referees, they come into the business and that's all they really know is like refereeing aspect of it. And, you know, and that's some of them, that's all, you know, they're ever going to know, but there's some of them come in too. And they're just, I don't know what the right word to say, so it doesn't sound like I'm coming off as like, but some of them just seem like they need to be led. So you have to kind of, I'd say stick the stick out in the water and see if you can get the mud to come out. But if you can get the filter and everything to go out, I think most of these guys today just need to be guided the right way because, see, I broke in, like I said, really, really early in the like game, like almost like late 90s, early 2000s, like that 2000 window. And I learned a lot from just watching. I mean, the biggest thing I always tell these young guys when I'm out there or whoever's out there, whether it be Ref Wayne or whoever it is to watch, like he said, to watch that ref through the curtain or to watch that ref on the monitor in the back if you get a chance, because that's the biggest way you can learn is by watching and by listening. Because if you can't listen, God gave us two ears and one mouth. So, you know, ask questions. I tell them, ask me anything. I may not, they may not always only want to hear what I got to say, but ask questions, because asking questions is how we learn in general. You can't have a tree without water in it. I just think the biggest thing in general, though, is it's the way you your attitude, and that is, you know, if you go out there with a good attitude of knowing that I got to do a role with these guys, I got to be the guy that go out there and determine this matchup and make sure things are going to go right. That's the biggest thing, because a lot of these guys, especially out here in the Northwest, because like I said, we do have TV production with BCW called Fight TV and all that, and you know, you just got to know where they need to be, because if they're in the way of a camera angle or something, you kind of got to let them know not to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, too. It's just a growing process.
Yeah, and we also dictate the pace as well, which, you know, some people, like, it takes a lot to understand that, you know, we look out, we see if they're losing the crowd, you know, we got to try to, you know, try to get them where they need to be, and as far as, like, hey, you know, let's pick this up, you know, or whatever. So it's really, it's being a field general. It's like, even though we're not, you know, quote unquote, the competitors, we are basically the quarterbacks in the ring, just making sure that everything goes smooth one way or the other. So that's really important.
Now, T-Rex brought up television, and here in our neck of the woods for Blue Collar Wrestling, we do television tapings as well as, just like tonight, the live pay-per-views. So television is something that a lot of referees have now, whether it be streaming services or iPay-per-views, or even some promotions have traditional television broadcasts. It's something that on the independent level is starting to pick up, but it's relatively new to a lot of the referees as well as a lot of the wrestlers. Ref Wayne, do you run into a lot of promotions that you work for that do television, and do you find it easier or harder or about the same to referee the matches for television as opposed to just your standard show?
It's definitely a little more complicated. Now, we have a big company in Maryland called MCW, Maryland Championship Wrestling. I do not work for that company. You know, I'm good friends with all the ones who do, but that's, you know, that's the next step up. But we do have a lot of companies that run, not just in Maryland, but like Pennsylvania, Virginia. They do a lot of DVD tapings. Obviously, they release their own DVDs at a show. And then we have some like Fight TV out of Rockville. And we also have, you know, some people who do like, they do live TV tapings to broadcast. We did a charity show in Delaware that was a live broadcast. And it changes the dynamic, because you have to be more conscious than ever of where you are, you know, and the wrestlers, you know, because nobody wants to see, you know, 3 minutes of, you know, your butt kind of in the hard cam. So it makes it a little bit more difficult, just trying to understand, like, when counts are being made, the positioning, to make sure that everything is opened up, especially if you have, like, the handheld, like, ringside cams and the hard cam. And if you work with a company that has, like, the boom cam, it just changes the dynamic of kind of what you're used to. You're a little bit more limited in your motion, and you just kind of got to make sure that, you know, you keep everything opened up to not only the live audience, but also the audience at home.
Now, T-Rex, you've been doing TV for a while now in one form or another at Blue Collar. When you first were doing television matches, did you find that it was a little bit of a harder transition, or was it pretty seamless for you?
It was at first, it was hard, because I started doing TV around probably, I'm going to say 04, 05, 2004, 2005, for those of you that don't know what 04, 05 mean. But it was definitely a transition, like I said, because it was in a normal match, you can kind of, if there's no TV, you can kind of, you know, have a little more leniency and be able to, you know, do a little more things. But on TV, you have to be pretty much like Ref Rain said, you have to be cut and dry. You have to be there. You have to know where to be also. you know, horseshoe, you need to know where to be in and out. If a guy's in a corner, you need to know the right time to come in and check. Yeah, for me, it was a real big leap. It took a lot to learn, but I finally, you know, learned that from other referees that would say, hey, I got a tip for you, or, you know, another guy that was really good telling me all the time was, and he wrestles and he refs sometimes occasionally still, was a man by the name of Tex Thompson. He helped me a lot when it came to learning where to be on TV and where not to be, as well as Sandy Barr, guys like that. It really is important. It's really important to have somebody that's willing to teach you a little bit so you don't go out there and fall on your face per se, because again, we have to control the matchup. We have to dictate, you know, tell the guys on TV. The biggest thing on TV for a ref to know, too, is telling a guy, if you got a 10-minute match, they got to start wrapping it up on 7 or 8. You got to tell them, hey, 5 minutes gone, 7 minutes gone. Start going home, fellas. Like I heard Wayne say earlier, dictate. See what that crowd's doing. It's more than just TV, I think. I think it's being aware of where you are at all times, for one. And for two, it's also – It's a different kind of light now, because you, like you said, you got TV. So not just the people there on TV are watching you, but you got the people in the arena watching you. So now you got several sets of eyes. You might have thousands sets of eyes watching you.
Now, in professional wrestling, my teacher taught me that referees are also the first line of defense as far as the safety of the wrestlers. I mean, sometimes guys get injured in there. Sometimes something happens with the ring where the ring becomes unsafe. You on occasion will have fans that are causing problems, be it in the crowd or trying to get into the ring. But referees are sort of the first line of defense in protecting everybody that's in the match. Now, Ref Wayne, have you had a lot of instances where you had to use that philosophy in order to keep everybody in the match safe?
Not as much as far as the fans in the crowd or getting into the ring. We usually have pretty good security at the shows, and somebody, if it is a show that has like a, you know, a bar on premises or something, get a little rowdy, but they get it pretty settled down. I've had multiple injury and near injury issues where you just need to make sure you kind of stay on top of it. If there's any question whatsoever, you just need to, you know, go over and check on them and make sure. And then if you're not satisfied with the reaction or the response, at that point you have to make that call. To call it. You know, I've had a guy fall off the apron and hit his head and climb back in like nothing was wrong, but he was completely concussed. And I was like, whoa, you know, like we can't continue with this. I had to go ahead and call that match. We had an issue where the bottom rope broke, and like I kind of took and like literally just got the rope like out of the ring, and we continued the match with the top two ropes, which is okay. So I've had a couple of those issues. But luckily, never the fan interventions. I think as a referee, you just have to really be on a swivel. You have to be aware of the competitors, of the atmosphere, of the environment, and make judgment calls on the fly to keep the safety of yourself and the wrestlers and the fans at the forefront of what you're doing.
Absolutely. I recently had a guy in a match that looked like he banged his head pretty good. When I asked him if he was all right, he said he was, but looking at him, he definitely wasn't all there. So I was like, no, you're not, and we had to change the finish a little bit just to get him out of there because he was absolutely concussed just looking at him, checking that. Now, T-Rex, I know we've seen some injuries there at Blue Collar Wrestling before. Sometimes the ring gets a little questionable, and I'm sure you've seen a fan or two in your career get a little bit over the line. What have you had to do in your career to keep everyone safe?
I've also seen top ropes break. I was in a ring once when a top rope broke. That was kind of concerning, a little bit, a little scary, because you really don't. In that situation, that was the first time I ever saw it, and I really didn't know what to do. Yes, but I have also seen I've also seen, you know, situations with fans, you know, where they get a little crazy. They might have a little bit too much of the concessions, the adult beverages a little bit, and you know, they wanna try to intervene in the show somehow, some way. And you just kind of gotta let them say if they want to say to a point, but not if they try to get in that ring or cross that quote unquote line or barrier. That's when you kind of, hopefully you have a good enough security team to help. But if not, that's where the ref is going to have to step in. I've never had to physically yet, like, throw somebody out of a ring per se. I've had a couple close calls where I had to throw people out of the ring, but I've never had to, in 18 years, never had to physically throw somebody out of a ring yet or, you know, have to have the wrestlers come help or anything. I've never had to do that. So honestly, the closest interaction I've ever had is a couple times where some fans have gotten up on the ring apron and pounded on it or whatever, and you got to get them out of there. But I've never physically had to, like, throw a fan out of the ring per se. I mean, I've had more of that incidents out in the crowd. Like, if you got guys out in the crowds where the fans want to try to get between them than anything else, I've never had a fan though try to come out the ring.
In Alaska once, I had a fan try to pull a heel manager off the apron. My instinct was to get him off, but looking down, happened to be a 6-year-old boy, so that got a little awkward.
I guess.
Yeah, those are the ones that can fit between the guardrails.
Exactly. Unfortunately, there was no guardrail there, so it was pretty easy for him to get up there. Another responsibility of the referee a lot of times is leading the match. We talked about it a little bit earlier on, but sometimes when you have younger wrestlers in the ring, especially if everyone in the ring is fairly new except for the referee is actually the one that guides the match and helps things along. Ref Wayne, do you have a lot of instances where you work where you're actually the guy that has to lead the whole match?
Typically, I've been fortunate enough that the matches that I've reffed have been fairly veteran, you know, either veteran or veteran young guy. Mostly, it's like trainer trainee kind of stuff. There was one show that the whole premise of the show was like young up and comers, like ones that maybe have had like their first or second match in the business, and the whole show was kind of prefaced around that. It was like the kind of like a rookie show, if you would. And that was exactly as you're saying. You know, people are trying to do more than they should, and you just kind of got to, you know, like just bring them back to earth and be like, no, you know, like let's, you know, entertain the crowd. Let's make sure we stay safe and let's all go home to our families. This ain't the time for that. So it is, you know, the communication's key and it's vital, especially when you notice something like that. But luckily, like I said, in my early, you know, with how long I've been doing it, I haven't experienced too much of that other than that one instance. It's usually a really seasoned, you know, 8, 9, 10-year veteran in with a, you know, a rookie or a first, second show kind of guy. So I haven't really had to step in and be that ring general as far as being the most experienced in the ring yet.
T-Rex, how about you? Do you ever have to be the man in charge of guiding the match when you got newer guys in the ring?
Absolutely. I've had it happen quite a few times over the last few years of my career. And I always just try to I always try to figure out a way. Maybe if it's a heel, tell them, like, maybe try to cheat on while I'm there or something, or get my attention away. So that way they got something. Or if it's a face, you know, I've even gone into them when they're in a corner and they're in there and I'm trying to separate them, tell them, like, you know, fight back or something. So that way that there's something that clicks in their head to at least try to do it, because the fans are literally, like, watching every move that you make in there. And we as refs, we see this more often than not. And I'm sure Ref Wayne will tell that too, that if you are watching the fans and they see it, like, for instance, the other thing I see a lot with younger guys, because there are a lot of younger guys in this business in general, they're not seasoned enough to know if the match starts to go away, how to steer it back. And that's where we as a ref come in and say, you know, hey, we got to do something to pick the pace up or to slow the tempo down or to get the fans back. Because if they're if there's nothing going on and you don't hear no really crowd reaction or noise, first of all, big cue that something isn't, that they're not buying. And if the fans aren't buying what you're selling, then you kind of have to abort the ship a little bit and get the reins and bring it back. So, I mean, you can't sit here and, I guess from my standpoint as a ref, you can't just always sit back in the corner and just let things come. You have to go out and make the action happen. That's
yep.
the biggest thing is that's the biggest thing is making the action happen. You have to be very good at knowing psychology, because the ref I think has to know more psychology than the boys do, in a sense, because if they're out there and you got a classic heel face match going on and you got a heel even going on, and they're too green to really figure out the psychology of it, that's where we as a ref literally have to almost call the spots for them. I mean, I've even had to do like a few little spot calls for guys because, you know, they get lost or whatever. And it just, in the end of the day, you do what's best for the interest of that match, and you do what's best for the interest of the company that night you're working for and the fans.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that, especially when it comes to like the spot calling with the younger guys. If they are the heel, you know, sometimes they are doing moves that are very, you know, face-like, and they're not working the heat properly. And you see the crowd get lost, and maybe not lost in the interest in a match, but lost in the dynamic of who is who. And that's when you need to kind of, you know, pull them apart, go in the corner and be like, you know, you got to work heat, do something cheap. You know what I mean? Like get the crowd hating you again, because right now it's a neutral. And you never want that. You always want the rise, the fall, and the rise. You always want there to be a fluctuation of hope and disappointment. And then, you know, you never want that middle ground. When the crowd's sitting on their hand and it's just neutral and everything is, you know, there's no up or down, there's no comeback. It's just everything's just back and forth. It's exciting as a spot fest if it's two people who can do that. But if the psychology's wrong, then, you know, there's no invested interest from the crowd into the match. And that's our job, to make sure the crowd stays invested.
Absolutely.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has some questions for Ref Wayne and for T-Rex. So, QT, take it away.
Well, thank you, Sungai. Hello, Baltimore Ref Wayne and T-Rex.
How you doing?
Hello, sir.
Very, very good. Ref Wayne, happy Father's Day if you're a father.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. You as well, if it applies to you.
Oh, okay. Now, Ref Wayne, have you ever had to take a knife-edge chop from a female wrestler ever to loosen up the crowd before the match?
Yeah, I've never taken a knife-edge chop. I always do the gimmick where, like, when I'm checking the heel, they get, like, very, like, how dare you kind of. So, you know, I've had, like, some push-offs and stuff like that. Luckily, I've worked a couple women's matches, but I've never taken a knife-edge chop from a woman yet. Taken a couple from a man, but never from a woman.
Whoa, okay, all right. Can we ask what the hardest knife-edge chop you've ever had from a male wrestler?
Whew, yeah, there's this guy out of Baltimore. His name is Mason Martin. It's the Baltimore Beast. And he does – It's like a knife edge, but basically he calls it brotherly love. So he brings both arms back and he does them like across at the same time. So there's just like no escaping the pain. Like it was like ridiculous. I like literally like crumbled at it. I was like, good Lord, you know, I did the breathing and everything and it just didn't matter. It hurt half the match. It was a bad situation, but he was unhappy at a call I made. And you know, and it was at this point, it was a no DQ match, so he was tired of me being in his business, and he took it into his own hands.
Dang. Okay. All right. Well, Ref Wayne, if you could travel back in time to referee a match, and you had a choice between these two, which would you choose? Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd, or the Fabulous Moose versus Penny Banner?
And a bit. See, Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd, I think the spectacle of that match, you know what I mean? Just the behemoths of the magnitude of what of what that match, you know, was or what it, you know, I think I would have to take that match. Like I said, I'm not super right now, as early in my career as I'm not super into refereeing female matches. I've done a couple here and there. Some have went better than others. But I think that the Andre the Giant, I just think for the spectacle of what that is and the size, and I just think I think that would be the right match to choose.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, T-Rex, what if you had this choice? Hurricane versus The Rock or Molly Holly versus Trish Stratus?
That is good. I'm going to have to go with, though, I would have to honestly go with probably, I would say, the women's match, just because I think the way the wrestling world is evolving right now, that would be an ideal match. Not that I wouldn't love to do The Rock and The Hurricane, but I think Molly Holly and Trish Stratus should be one. I mean, one of them's in the Hall of Fame right now, and I got to meet her a couple years ago at CAC, so I would have to say Trish Stratus. That would be the ultimate dream match, just because of the evolution that she brought, that women's revolution, if you will, to the women's circuit. You know, people like her and Lita, I mean, gosh, God bless them, Mae Young, Fabulous Moolah, people like that is what made me as a kid and as a high school kid want to get in there and do that. So I definitely would go Trish Stratus, no questions asked.
Now, which one did you meet at the Cauliflower Alley Club, Molly Holly or Trish Stratus?
I met Trish Stratus at CAC 51. She was definitely one that I remember highly out of that class that year, because she was definitely, you were able to like talk to her more than you were some other people there. But I got to meet her and talk to her for a few minutes. It was definitely like, it was a dream come true.
Wow. Okay. All right. Now, speaking of high schools, T-Rex, can you tell us what your school's colors and mascot was? This is a very important question for my logbook.
Very important question. All right, well, school colors were black and gold, and school mascot was an eagle.
An eagle? Was it a screaming eagle?
Well, you're from the area, and actually, you're kind of north of where I went to high school from initially. I'm sure you've heard of the Hudson's Bay High School. I'm a graduate and an alum of the class of 2000 Hudson's Bay, and I called it the Screaming Eagle, but it's just a regular American bald eagle, but you know.
Oh, okay, Hudson's Bay. Yes, I've been in your gym.
I'm sure you have.
Yes, and it wasn't because of a homeless situation either. Yes. Okay.
Oh, well, that's always good to know. Make sure if you're ever in a situation like that, that's a good gym to be at, though, because it used to be a bomb shelter back in the day.
Oh, now I can't say the same for Gregor Petrov, but I think he was homeless at one time and living in Hudson's Bay High School gym. Yes. Gregor Petrov.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I know that they have had, at my former high school, they have used it for homeless people there and in the past, so.
Wow, okay. All right, well, Ref Wayne, both T-Rex, myself, and Sign Guy have seen a young wrestler out here called Kane Jaden, and he recently was in an event at Blue Collar Wrestling called the J Cup Junior Heavyweight Match, or tournament. Well, during this match, during a match in the J Cup Junior Heavyweight Tournament, he was facing his opponent, who was in the center of the ring, and he was standing on the second ropes with his feet between the turnbuckle. Without taking his eyes off his opponent, he hopped up to the next turnbuckle as effortlessly as a robin hopping to a branch. I was stunned by his athleticism. My question is, have you ever stopped in your were you ever stopped in your referee tracks by a move you had seen in the ring?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, there's this young guy, Jordan Oliver, and I know, you know, you said in the ring, but this is still something that's quite impressive. We were doing a TV taping in New Jersey, and he hit a running Spanish fly off of outside onto the floor. But when he did it, it was incredible because, like, it was like a chair. It was like two chairs. And as the guy, like, ran into him, he hit one chair. The guy hit the other chair. They hooked, and then he Spanish flied off of it. And at that point, I didn't know what to do. I mean, obviously, I was counting them out, but I didn't know, like, it even going back and watching, it just blew my mind. That's probably one of the coolest things I've seen.
Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what a running Spanish fly is? Or
sure, absolutely. Yeah. A Spanish fly is basically, in layman's terms, it's one wrestler will hook the other wrestler almost in what would appear, you know, nowadays to be more like a rock bottom type hook. And basically the aggressor takes they do a backflip while the person hooked into the rock bottom does a front flip. So if anybody's, you know, Leo Rush in 205 Live, he used to do a running Spanish fly called the Rush Hour. And it's basically phenomenal to see in general. A lot of the Cruiserweight Classic, some guys did top rope Spanish flies, which was pretty cool. But to see it on the indie level, just like the momentum and just the timing and the precision of hitting the chairs and then like colliding and then, you know, hitting the fly, it was phenomenal. Both, you know, both people just, it was an incredible moment.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, Ref Wayne, T-Rex said his mascot was an eagle in high school and his colors were black and gold. Can you tell us your school colors and mascot?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. His was an eagle. My school colors were orange and blue, and my school mascot was a parrot. really striking the fear in the hearts of, you know, everybody and crackers everywhere, you know. So, yeah.
Was it a parrot?
No, it wasn't. We were in engineering school. It was just a parrot. I think it was holding a protractor. It was the most ridiculous thing in the history of the world. Yeah, it wasn't fight. There was no fight to it. It was a learning parrot. It had like a ruler and a protractor. It didn't have anything cool or devious. Just a parrot.
Oh my! Well, that would strike fear into the hearts of your opponents. Not like a buccaneer or say like a grizzly bear. Yes.
Was it like a Coco Beware parrot?
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny. I literally just did a show with him Friday night. That's so funny. No, yes, it actually looked a lot like Frankie. It was just, it was just sitting there holding a ruler and a protractor, and I think there was a compass behind it. I think that the devil was in the simplicity. Like, people are like, there's no way they're just parrots. They got something up their sleeve. And then we just win the psychological warfare before the match even starts.
Oh. All right. Well, Ref Wayne, are you aware of the reigning champ in your area, Casey Carlisle?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, Casey Carlisle is she's the Adrenaline Championship Wrestling Women's Champion. She is she works for a number of James Ellsworth's company, one being Adrenaline Championship Wrestling and also Fire, Female In-Ring Entertainment. Both are James Morris Productions.
Wow. All right. Now, are there some wow moments that you have? Have you ever reffed a Casey Carlisle match?
I have not reffed a Casey Carlisle match. As far as Adrenaline Championship Wrestling goes, I've actually done a battle royal for them as a wrestler. I've never refereed on their show. It's just a matter of the booking. You know what I mean? It's just, I'm not quite there yet. I'm good friends with Ellsworth. You know, I have him in my cell phone. Like, we talk and we message, but I just haven't been booked for an ACW show yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, T-Rex, can you tell our listeners about your recent trip to the Cauliflower Alley Club, and did you meet any referees there?
I went again this year, which was just recently. And I actually I've met quite a few refs there over the time that I've been there. I'm sure maybe you might have heard of one named Sparky Ballard, James Beard, obviously James Beard, and I have started to develop a relationship as a mentor, because James is one of those guys that you don't find very often, but he's willing to let you just come up and pick his ear and give you an honest opinion. So rekindling with him. I've met a few of them doing that and some of that, and I'd love to meet a lot more down the road. There was a gal there, I can't think of her name right now, though, that reffed. She reffed this year on both days, as a matter of fact. She reffed in the Battle Royal, and I think she reffed a couple other – she reffed a women's match there and another match there. I just can't think of her name right off the top of my head, but if you're listening, I'm sorry. Don't hate T-Rex too much the next time you see me. And if you do, just chop me. So no big deal. I can't think of the name. I'm literally drawing a blank on it, but she's a heck of a talent. And I'd have to say that I would love to be able to work with her again.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
sorry, dude. I got chair timers, man. I'm sorry.
Well, okay. Well, Ref, I was young enough to have the fortune to see kind of the tail end of the territorial days out here in the Pacific Northwest. Owens, as a promoter of Houghton Wrestling, had such talent as Buddy Rose, Rip Oliver, and Stan Stasiak, the master of the heart punch. Would you yourself call yourself a historian? And have you seen some of the old Portland wrestling tapes of the 60s and 70s?
That broke up a little bit. I heard most of it. Was that question for me or for T-Rex? I'm sorry.
Well, that was for you, Ref Wayne.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't seen, as far as a historian, like I, you know, with having the network, I you know, obviously I watch some of the older stuff. Mainly, like I said, with being a referee, I kind of do a lot of tape study on different eras. But as far as the Portland wrestling scene and the territories and stuff like that, I am probably not nearly as versed as I should be. So I would say, unfortunately, not.
Oh, okay. Well, Ref Wayne, I hope to have to assign you a homework assignment, and it is to watch Buddy Rhodes turn face. It's one of the more
memorable
history. Yeah. Damn.
Buddy
Rose turns face.
All right. I will definitely do that report, and I will report back to you.
Oh, very good. Okay. Well, Ref Wayne, is it one of your goals to referee a match in Japan?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to my wife about that, just about the boom of independent wrestling and how not just the E is, you know, the prominent promotion with like things like Chikara, New Japan, Ring of Honor. You know, maybe not Japan specifically. I think I would love to really have the opportunity, you know, anywhere. You know, I have a passport. So anything, you know, Mexico, anything outside of the States, I would be really amped for. But I do think, like I said, with the, you know, the New Japan uprising and like just the attention that's garnering, I'm sure the communication barrier would be an interesting situation to overcome. But I would more than be up for the challenge if the opportunity ever presented itself. I think that would be pretty cool.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, T-Rex, in your opinion, when will we see the debut of robots in blue-collar wrestling, robot wrestling?
Robot wrestling, huh?
Yes.
Well, I would love to see it. So that would be kind of cool, actually, maybe. But, oh, man, now you're making me feel Transformer-y. Let's see. I'm going to say the year 2022.
Really? Okay, and who would be the most likely opponent for the first robot ever match? Maybe Sunny Days or JB Moonshine?
I was thinking more on the lines of myself that I think would be good for it too. Maybe even Lone Star. Lone Star, or let's see, maybe Paw Moonshine. Paw could wrestle a robot, I think. I think
wow.
That'd be fun to see him. Or either that, or he could do the robot. One of the two. That would be cool.
Well, I would be very honored to be the bell ringer in a Paw Moonshine versus robot bull rope match. Yes.
Yeah, man. I bet you would. I bet you would. I would love to be the ref in that.
Oh, okay. Well, Ref Wayne, have you ever had to have an intervention and tell a rookie wrestler to get more training both mentally and physically before he returns to the ring? Have you ever had to have an intervention?
I am probably the most boring person you will ever interview. No, I've had some situations where people kind of beat themselves up really bad in their performance. And so I just tell them, you know, like mentally just try to really make sure that, you know, this is what you want to do and that you can mentally kind of carry forward. But as far as, you know, somebody just totally going in and you know, crapping the bed, so to speak, and me having to comment on that, no, I haven't personally had to do it. I know it's been done. I've literally heard one just the other day. A promoter tell a guy he should take off his boots and burn them. I personally have never been the person on the other side of that conversation. Thank God, either side of the conversation. So I will say no.
Take off your boots and burn them. Boy, that's pretty bad. That's stinging.
And I'll tell you, and it was less in-ring ability and more locker room etiquette and professionalism.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Ref Wayne, what is the most amount of Ref Wayne memorabilia that you have sold at an event? How many T-shirts have you sold?
Sure. There's a promotion in Glendale, West Virginia, SCWA. It was the company that I literally made my debut in, like Iron Manning a show. And I sold, as a referee, I sold basically in one day. My shirt's only $15 because I'm not a wrestler. That's why I don't do standard indie prices. But basically, I sold about $60 in T-shirts and then about $30 in koozies. So it was a good day. People just kind of, you know, saw me and saw me do my thing. And then, you know, they kind of got behind me because they realized that I was Iron Manning, a 9-match show. And, you know, and they just, it was a huge pop, you know, as, you know, I did a couple of things that were pretty cool and people just completely got behind me. And I am super over in that promotion. I'm actually doing a show with Joey Ryan August 3rd. So.
Wow, August 3rd. Okay. Do you, Ref Wing, do you have any events coming up July in around Independence Day?
So here's the thing. In my shoot job, I am a mattress salesman. A pretty high like rank. I'm an area manager. And the problem is 4th of July, there's three non-negotiable weekends. That's Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day. So I don't have any coming around Independence Day. I do have a show Saturday coming up in Dover, Delaware, right across from the Dover racetracks for Rampage Pro Wrestling. That's their Stairway to Gold event. And then on the June 30th, I will be in PA for SSW for Superstar Wrestling for their new Revolutions tournament. And that's pretty much my next two shows. And then I'm going to take a couple weeks in July off, you know, because of the mattress selling thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, T-Rex, in the storied history of serial killers in the United States, Rodney Alcala is one of the worst. He is a convicted rapist and serial killer. He was sentenced to death in California. Oh, I got to put up my screen again. Okay, in California in 2010 for 5 murders committed in that state between 1977 and 1979. In 2013, he received an additional sentence of 25 years to life after pleading guilty to 2 homicides in New York in 1971 and 1977. His true victim total remains unknown, and could be much higher. Prosecutors say that Alcala toyed with his victims, strangling them until they lost consciousness, then waiting until they revived, sometimes repeating this process several times before finally killing them. He is sometimes labeled the dating game killer because of his 1978 appearance on the dating game television show in the midst of his murder spree. As of about 6 months ago, Rodney Alcala has spent 37 years and 11 months on death row. Now, why I mention this, I'm not sure, but I think I was thinking something about Sarah Jane, the chair that Gregor Petrov used to use on his opponents, and myself, and I briefly dated Sarah Jane. How this links to serial killer Rodney Alcala, I'm not quite sure. I didn't have quite time to do that, yes. But maybe yeah. My question is, do you hope that Sarah Jane and I get back together at Blue Collar Wrestling? How about that?
Well, you know there was a song called Reunited, and it feels so good. So maybe you can reunite with Sarah Jane and have your little rendezvous, and maybe this time, QT, you treat her a little better, because I've heard stories about you and Sarah Jane, and I've heard that, you know, she's got a little bit of a thing for the old QT, but I think it's more of the QT has a little thing for her too. So, you know, maybe I can officiate this wedding when that happens. That would be something I'd love to do. Officiate a QT in a Sarah Jane wedding. Why not? I mean, everybody else is these days. And on the topic you were talking about before, man, yeah, I ain't even gonna get into that serial killer stuff, man. That's enough for me, man.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, you had me on the journey with you though. I was there.
Imagine spending 37 years and 11 months on death row.
Nah, man, I'm only 36, so that would basically be my whole entire life. I mean, I couldn't imagine anybody spending 37 years and 11 months, not alone just in jail or like death row, but prison in general. I mean, if you're thinking about it, I mean, that's, God, dude, I mean, hopefully one day maybe they should use Sarah Jane's chair, hook it up to some electricity and fry him. I don't know, but man, wow, that's all I'm going to say to that.
Oh, okay, well, there you go. Now that's kind of wrestling related. Okay, very good. Boy, I dodged a bullet there. Okay. All right. Well, Ref Wayne, good luck on your homework assignment to watch that video, Buddy Rose Turns Face. That's a good one. Okay.
Can I mention something by the way? Not just watch the turn of Buddy Rose, but here's a guy that was probably legitimately then. He probably weighed close to probably, I don't know, 270, but the guy, the way he moved in there was phenomenal for a guy his size, because he literally would do this move, and I'm sure QT has seen it before, where like he would hang from that bottom rope onto the ring apron, and I remember as a kid watching Buddy do that, and there was something about it that just made me go, wow, for a guy that was, I'd say like 270 probably, be able to hang from that bottom rope with his foot and just hang the way he did, and then eventually fall down to the floor was amazing.
Yes, he had very good moves for a big man, and he was also known to do one-arm push-ups.
Actually, Ref Wayne, when you do that, get back to me too, because I want to see what you learn, because I know a lot about Buddy. He's one of the guys I've trained with too over the years. So.
Yeah, apparently I'm going to just look up his entire, you know, body of work and just maybe make it a thing. So I'll just look up everything I can on Buddy Rose. It sounds very interesting. So thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No problem. Well,
he worked in the E or WWF back then. So yeah.
Ooh. Yes. All right. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sun Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, gentlemen, we're just about out of time today. We have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure you guys have plenty of time. So we'll start with Ref Wayne. If there's anything you'd like to plug and promote, social medias, upcoming shows, merchandise, your favorite ice cream store, anything in the world, the floor is all yours.
Sure, I appreciate that. So Basically, like I said earlier, my next show is going to be Rampage Pro Wrestling or Stairway to Gold. That's at the Delaware Agricultural Museum across from the Dover Downs Racetrack, and that's going to be this coming Saturday. And then after that is going to be SSW's New Revelation Tournament, SSW Superstar Wrestling. That's in PA. It's, I don't know the city, and it's horrible. It's just blanking right now. And since I can plug pretty much anything, I work for Mattress Firm. Mattress Firm is a multi-channel mattress chain store. They're everywhere, 3,200 locations, coast to coast, border to border. So if you're ever in the Baltimore area, down by Arundel Mills Mall, stop in and see me. I'll give you a great deal on a bed to any of the listeners. And this was really fun. So I hope everybody goes on my Facebook page. It's just basically Ref Wayne. And, you know, gives me a like and, you know, becomes friends. I just like to kind of talk to business, learn as much as possible. And thank you for having me on the show.
Our pleasure to have you. And best of luck as you continue on with your career. T-Rex, same thing for you.
All right, well, first of all, tonight I'm working for Blue Collar Wrestling at our internet pay-per-view in Portland, Oregon. Tonight, it's the school's out for the summer. Tonight, one of our matches on there, I believe, is a dog collar match. I'm not sure exactly where it's at on the card. Figured I'd give a shout-out and plug that. Any of you in the Portland area, please come out and support a good local wrestling company that's got a lot of work ethic, a lot of rise, and a lot of rising stars, and a lot of current stars that are at their peak, and some of us that are hardworking. Also, I'd like to plug I recently started my own Team T-Rex apparel line too, if you will. I got my own stuff now, like T-shirts and hats and that. And if you're there tonight or whatever, and when I get the website up and running, come purchase a shirt, purchase whatever, a picture. Just purchase local independent wrestling in general, whether it be a ticket, whether it be because I believe independent wrestling is what makes the bigger shows in the world the gateway. We're the gateway for those guys. Also, I just want to say Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there that are listening. T-Rex says Happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you, Ref Wayne.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll call it there. I'm just going to say again, come to the BCW. School's out for the summer. Internet pay-per-view, $12 for ringside, $10 for general admission, and the bell time starts at 6 p.m. tonight. I look forward to seeing you all, my beautiful fans and people there tonight. Come on out and support it. And if you're a father and you're listening and you do come out to the show tonight, heck, I'll cut you a deal on one of my T-shirts tonight just for you fathers, so, or any of my merchandise. So we'll chat and talk later. And thank you, everybody, for putting up with me for the last hour of your lives.
All right. Thank you, T-Rex. I will see you in a few hours. Fans, like T-Rex said, you can get the live iPay-per-view on the Fight TV app tonight. Should be a great showing. Bad Blood's going to be there. Lance Dean's going to be there. What more do you need? What more do you need, but you get more than that? So
I hear that.
Get out there, support your local independent wrestling. Definitely try to appreciate what the referees do. Most of them work very, very, very hard to make sure that you get the most entertainment possible out of your ticket price. So appreciate them the next time you go to a show. And we will be back with you next week. Next Friday afternoon, we have Marcus Waters. And 1 week from today, we have Gino Rivera on the program. Should be outstanding next week, so join us then.